Good morning. If we've never met before, my name is Ellie. My husband Thomas and I are the family pastors here. I just want to say happy Father's Day to all you guys. We appreciate you, and we're really excited to give you, all of you, all you men, a small gift at the end of the service today. This morning, we are continuing our journey through 1 Corinthians. If you haven't been here for the last few months, that's the book of the Bible that we're studying right now, kind of going section by section. And this book is found in the New Testament. It's actually a letter. It's a letter from the Apostle Paul to a church in the city of Corinth. So he's writing to the Corinthians. Today, we're going to be heading to chapter 7. If you don't have a Bible with you, we do have some you can borrow. They're just outside the door of the sanctuary there at the back. And you can even take one home if you don't have a Bible already. You're welcome to take one of those. So if you wouldn't mind standing with me, and we're going to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 17 to 24. And this is what it says. Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches. Was a man already circumcised when he was called? He should not become uncircumcised. Was a man uncircumcised when he was called? He should not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. Keeping God's commands is what counts. Each person should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let it trouble you, although if you can gain your freedom, do so. For the one who was a slave when called to faith in the Lord is the Lord's freed person. Similarly, the one who was free when called is Christ's slave. You were bought at a price. Do not become slaves of human beings. Brothers and sisters, each person, as responsible to God, should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Thank you. You can be seated again. I am so sorry, men, that on this special day, this Father's Day, we have to discuss circumcision. So I apologize for that, and I apologize that it is I who must discuss this, but we will get through it, okay? All right. Today, I would like you to think about this message as a bit of a combo meal, like you'd get at a fast food restaurant, okay? We're going to have a few different dishes. We'll have a burger, we'll have some fries, we'll have a drink, and then by the end, we should have a full meal, okay? So, as we tackle this part of Scripture this morning, we're going to talk about the context. That's our burger. We're going to have a story. I'm going to tell you a story. That's our fries. And then at the end, we'll finish off with some quotes. That's our drink. Okay, so what I mean is we'll first go over the context of these verses, kind of figure out what's going on here for our Corinthian brothers and sisters. Then I'll tell you a story that I feel really illustrates this text. And then I'll send you out with some quotes from people and the Bible that I discovered this past month and that I feel will really help us to reframe the way we think about following Jesus. All right, let's start with our main course, the burger, the context of these Bible verses. So in this section, Paul is writing to a group of believers, a group of people who had already responded to God's call, and these believers had some questions about this whole Christianity thing. Actually, all of chapter 7 is about how to follow Jesus in a bunch of different contexts. As you know, Thomas and I spend a lot of time teaching kids. Sometimes when you're explaining a game to a group of kids, you'll have that one kid who just asks a million questions about every possibility under the sun that could affect this game. You know, like, what if my partner has to go pee? What if the ball explodes? What if the lights turn off and it's dark suddenly and we can't see each other? How do we play the game then? Right? You've had that kid before. That's a silly example, of course, but that is kind of what the Corinthians were doing with Paul. They were new to this whole Christianity thing, and they wanted to follow Jesus, but they didn't exactly know how. They had a lot of questions about what it actually looks like in real life for real people with real issues to follow Jesus. And in the verses we read today, this part of Paul's letter, he seems to be addressing some of their questions regarding status, specifically about religious status and social status. The people were not sure what God required of them when it came to circumcision. If you don't know what this word means, you may need to ask a trusted adult in your safety network to explain it to you. I'm not going to explain the full medical process here this morning. But basically, circumcision in Bible times was a mark of identity. In the Old Testament, God commanded his people, the Israelites, to circumcise their sons as a way to distinguish themselves from all the other people, to visibly show that as God's chosen people, they were different, they were set apart. So the Israelites, aka the Jews, were circumcised from then on. But everyone else, also known as the Gentiles, were not circumcised. And the Jews kind of saw the Gentiles as rejected by God or not included in his family. And the Gentiles saw circumcised people as barbaric or unenlightened. And now we're here in this Corinthian context. The church is made up of both Jews and Gentiles who have all responded to the call of God. And they had come from these different backgrounds, and they had kind of turned these physical differences into marks of status with God. The Jews might have felt that they were more Christian because of their circumcision, and the Gentiles possibly felt excluded or lesser than because they didn't have this physical sign of belonging. They'd started identifying themselves according to human standards, and they were wondering if either of them needed to change themselves in order to be truly Christian. Paul's letter kind of tries to redirect these Christians. He basically tells them religious status and social status mean absolutely nothing when it comes to God's new kingdom. Jesus died on the cross for everyone and rose from the dead, and now his spirit fills the believer and identifies them all equally as children of God. There was no longer a need for circumcision to be the mark of belonging to God. The spiritual is more important than the physical. Relationship with God does not depend on whether you're circumcised or not. The call of God transcends religious or social status and all those other identity things. It supersedes all of our ideas about that stuff. I also want to chat about what Paul is saying to the Christians who were slaves at the time that they were called. Paul explains to them that although some of the situations they were in are extremely difficult, like slavery and persecution, and some of those things can't just be removed immediately, they're kind of unchangeable situations, God offers inner transformation to them in the midst of those situations. Along with the call of God comes transformation to our identity. Paul says there, the slave gets a new identity of one whose soul is free in Jesus Christ. They are called to now see their lives as service to God, not to men. They're free to follow Jesus and receive his love just the same as everybody else. But not only the slave is transformed, also the free person. The text said that the free person becomes like a slave in their soul, but to a kind and merciful master, Jesus Christ. They are also called to use their situation to the service of God, not using their physical freedom to run away from God's commands, but instead to submit to his will in all things. Within the call of God, there is transformation for all people. The point here is that God's calling, his gift of salvation, is available to all people of all backgrounds in all situations. It's available to circumcised and uncircumcised, slave and free, single and married, rich and poor, everyone. Paul reminds the Corinthians, though, that that outward stuff doesn't actually matter. What they really need to be focusing on, the one thing that counts, is keeping God's commands. Whoever they are, wherever they come from, whatever they're doing now, their primary job and responsibility is to keep God's commands within that context. Paul says you don't need to change into someone or something else. Just follow God right where you're at. And that's an instruction for us too. Remember, he said this is the rule he's laying down for all the churches. Our primary job and responsibility is also to keep God's commands within our context. Our status, our position in life, it's not going to count for or against us when we stand before God at the end of time. The only thing that will count is what we did with what God assigned to us. In verse 17, Paul says, everyone should live as a believer in whatever situation they were in when they were called. He's saying whatever your life looks like when God calls you, remain there, but reorient your whole focus to be on keeping God's commands. Now, obviously, there's a bit of a caveat here. For example, like some of these contexts are not going to work for following Jesus, okay? For example, you wouldn't be able to continue living your life as an assassin and still follow God because God says not to kill, right? You couldn't carry on being an art thief or the head of a successful Ponzi scheme and keep God's commands because those lifestyles go against his word and his commands to not steal, obviously, right? Some identities and situations will definitely need to be left behind us in order to follow Jesus. We do have to use some discernment and some common sense to decide if our current context is possible to remain in while keeping God's commands. And I've noticed that God often reveals those things to us gradually as we get to know him and grow in our faith. But the baseline instruction in this text is to carry on where you're at, if you can, but with a new focus on keeping God's commands. This concept reminds me of a parable. You might have heard it, a parable that Jesus told to his followers. We have a record of it in the book of Matthew. He told his followers, "One day a man was going away on a trip, and before he left, he gave each of his three servants some money to look after while he was gone. The first two servants took that money, they invested it, and they ended up making more money. When their master came back, they were able to give him even more money than he had left them in charge of. The last servant, however, buried his money, did nothing with it, and when the master came back, that's all he had to show, just that regular money that the master had given him. And the master was so angry with him and his inability to do anything with what he'd been given. We have each been assigned a situation by God. What are we going to do with it? Will God be pleased with what we did in the context we were assigned? What Paul is communicating to both the Corinthians and to us in these verses is that God's call is available to all. Our human standards should not be the focus of our attention, but rather we should focus on what counts, keeping God's commands right where we are. All right, we have finished our burger, the context of these verses, and now we're going to move on to the fries. All right, for this part, I'm just going to tell you a story. It's about my grandma. Her name is Gertie, and I'm sure as I tell the story, you'll see how it connects to our scripture for today. This story begins in the 1970s. At that point in my grandma's life, she had recently immigrated to Canada from Germany. She was not a Christian. She had a religious background, but she'd been going her own way and living contrary to God's commands for a long time. But as a young adult, she started to become more curious about God, and she kind of felt this pull towards something, but she hadn't yet come to know God personally. She was married to my grandpa, who was also not a believer. She had two young children. She was exhausted and experiencing just a lot of loneliness. My grandpa worked a lot. She was on her own for most of her days. And one day, my grandma was standing in her kitchen in absolute despair. She was so exhausted from life and loneliness, and she had this pain in her heart. She was even feeling like she wanted to take her own life. She felt like she needed to just do something or say something to counteract all this pain in her heart. So she decided she was going to scream the name of the Lord in vain. Now, because of her religious upbringing, she knew that this was wrong to use God's name as a swear, but she's like, I just need to do something. So she slammed her fist on the counter and she screamed, "Jesus Christ!" And in that moment, she did not feel any better. She, in fact, felt very guilty. But she looked up and miraculously on the wall of her kitchen appeared the letters G-O-D. In big black writing. They were not there before. They appeared in that moment, and she felt the voice of God say, "Yes, I am your answer. You will find me." This is the beginning of God proving himself to my grandma, and there's much more to the story and a lot more miraculous things that happened to her that I'd like to share with you when we have more time. But what you need to know is eventually she met a Christian woman named Joan, who she became friends with. And one day she asked Joan about God, and Joan said, "Yeah, I know God." And my grandma was shocked. She said, you know God? Joan said, yeah, the way to know God is through Jesus Christ, his son. And Joan told my grandma the gospel message about Jesus dying for her sins. And once my grandma heard this message, she very quickly tried to end their coffee date. And she ran to her bedroom and she fell on her knees and she was crying, weeping, and she prayed. She said, God, I know you are real. I know you are real forever. I know now that you are my dad and I want to obey you and follow you always. She was overwhelmed by the love of God and was inspired right away to obey him with every area of her life. She began to reorient her whole current situation to align with God's commands. She started praying and reading her Bible. She started raising her kids in a new way in the Lord, reading to them about Jesus and buying Christian cassette tapes for them to listen to. She started attending church, which was actually really difficult for her at first. The amount of love and kindness and joy that she felt in that building was almost too much for her because she wasn't used to experiencing those kind of emotions. She began to assess her whole identity up to that point and try to model herself after her new identity in Christ. She claimed that new identity of child of God and Christian parent and Christian spouse. She also shared with me, these are her own words, she said, I went a bit too far and even stopped wearing perfume and only wore skirts for a while because that's what she thought good Christian women were supposed to do. And at that time, she was actually quite a fashionable lady and she really did love perfume, but she was willing to even sacrifice those things to Jesus. Over time, through relationship with Jesus and growing in her faith, she realized which parts of her actually needed to change and come under a new identity and which parts were okay to keep. So she does wear perfume now, and pants are a regular part of her wardrobe. But she does still love Jesus very much to this day. I love how radically my grandma tried to adjust her life. She left no stone unturned and even submitted her perfume use to the Lord. She wanted absolutely everything to be under Jesus' authority. She would tell you that she's not a perfect person, of course, but I've seen how as her life has changed, there's been different situations and things that have come up. She has always tried to reorient and focus herself back towards God and his commands. My grandpa, eventually, because of my grandma's faithfulness, became a Christian as well a few years after her. And they raised their kids together to know God. And one of her children, my dad, grew up to be a pastor and a Christian father and a Christian husband, and the legacy of faith continued to me and my siblings, and I hope will continue through my children and their children as well. I don't know if you've ever felt the call of God. I don't know what that looked like for you if you have. Maybe it was a gradual coming to know him. Maybe it was a miraculous encounter, letters on the wall like my grandma had. But I do know that it's possible your decision to respond to God's call and faithfully keep his commands could impact the generations after you. Responding to God's call could mean that your children or children around you also respond to God's call, and then their children and their children's children could also do that. I thought this story was perfect for the text because it really shows how someone received the call of God in a less than ideal situation, not an easy situation to reorient your life in. Young kids, all alone, new country, non-Christian spouse. But my grandma remained where she was, where God had assigned her. She clung to her new identity and tried her best to focus on what really counts, keeping God's commands. I want to be like this. I want all of us to be like this, to be true disciples of Jesus, studying his ways and commands and growing in our desire to follow him. To end our meal today, we're going to have a drink. We're going to end with some quotes from a few well-known Christian authors and some words from the Bible to kind of wash all this information down. Okay, these words that I discovered in the last month have really impacted my thinking about what it means to follow Jesus. The first one is from Australian theologian Leon Morris, and he says this, "Becoming a Christian is bringing what one is into the service of God." With this quote, I want to speak specifically to anyone here who is not a believer. If you have felt that nudge in your heart, if you have heard the voice of God, please respond to him. He wants to give you new life, a full and vibrant life. Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel in the Bible, verse chapter 36, verse 26 to 27, says, this is God speaking. He says, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. I invite you, if you've never before done this, to respond to his call this morning and allow him to put a new heart in you. Like the Tin Man, I think all of us are a little bit like that, and we want to have a real heart. Don't go another day with a stone heart. Just imagine, if you've been living with a stone heart and then you get a heart of flesh, imagine, it'd be like an awakening, right? Life would be made completely new. And God will move you into a new way of thinking and acting that will bring new life to you and to your specific situation. The second quote is from a well-known Christian author named Dallas Willard. And he says, discipleship is the process of becoming who Jesus would be if he were you. Becoming who Jesus would be if he were you. This is what Paul is asking the Corinthians to do, to be who Jesus would be if he were them. And this is what we should do as well. If Jesus was living my life, if he had had all of my experiences, he had my personality, my resources, my family, who would he be? What would he value? How would he spend his time? What would he do? I want you all to think about the situation that you've been assigned to by the Lord. Who would Jesus be in that situation? Who would Jesus be as a painter, as a driver for the school district, as a parent, as a caregiver to elderly parents? At the end of time, Jesus is going to ask us what we did where we were assigned. This work of keeping God's commands where we are is not to be done in our own strength. The music team is going to come on up, and we're going to sing a song. But I want to encourage you that God is the one who's going to help us to live lives that are honoring to him. Remember, in our Ezekiel text, it said that God gives us a new heart, and he is the one who moves us to follow his ways. We're going to sing a song called Cornerstone, and it's all about making Jesus the foundation of our lives. After the song, I'll send you out with a benediction or a blessing. But as we sing, I want to encourage you, if you've never done it before, to make Christ your cornerstone for the first time. And if you already have responded to God's call, use this opportunity to renew your commitment to walk in his ways right where you're at. Reflect on your situation that you've been assigned to and ask yourself who Jesus would be within that. Let's sing together.